Welcome to the Focus on the Beer podcast. We are here. We have not done an episode in a long time, and I didn't introduce us because I figure you've already listened to enough of our podcast and you know who I am. I'm Ryan. I've got Josh here. We're on Zoom, so it's a little weird.
We still have a podcast, you guys.
I don't know why we have one, but we still have one. No, I'm kidding.
Man, post-pandemic, you're doing all the things. You're out and about. It's hard to sit down and record a podcast.
Yeah, and I'm not drinking right now, so it's even harder to, like, go and keep track on what breweries are doing what. So, yeah.
Well, you know, just to assure our listeners, I am not drinking for two. I'm still drinking for one.
That's
not picking up that slack.
If we were in person, you'd be drinking for two probably, though.
Oh, God, no.
I felt like everyone, we did that barbecue at your house a couple weeks ago. I felt like everyone, like when I wasn't drinking things, I felt like people were going a little heavier handed on things. Maybe that was just my perception because I wasn't pouring anything into my glass.
Well, I kind of missed like a fair bit of that because I was out mining the grill, smashing bergs. I come inside like, oh shit, they popped all these bottles and I had to play catch up.
Yeah, but a lot of them were like on the dregs like at the end pretty quickly. Yeah. So
thankfully people were considerate. They did leave enough so that it wasn't just, you know, yeast cakes. Thank goodness.
Yeah, that's definitely something that you can run into if you stray away from the beer table at a bottle share for a while.
Yeah, don't get stuck at the grill too long. Always have a backup.
Yeah. So in this episode, we're going to run through a bunch of news that we've got. We've got some new breweries that are opening up or hopefully opening up in the next year to half a year-ish time. That we're going to actually talk about a book for a little bit, and then we'll finish it off with what we've been drinking lately. So let's jump into the news real quick here. First topic on hand is Red Leg
Brewing opening their brand new facility. You know, if you had taken my money at some point earlier this year, I would have said they're gonna open their new facility in conjunction with their anniversary on July 4th, and I'd have been wrong and probably out some money.
You would have lost a lot of money because they happened about two and a half, three weeks later.
Yeah So they did manage to get the new facility open, which is amazing. I mean, if you're following us on any of the social medias, there was a great video and a bunch of pictures that Ryan got in there and took. I was out of town when they actually opened, so I missed it. Not that I'm bitter, but we got some good footage of it. The place looks amazing. I hear they're actually having a little trouble keeping up with the beer. Like they're almost running out, which is wild, but also good for them. I mean, you know, to be going through their beer that quick.
From what I understand, the reason why they're almost running out of beer is because the new facility isn't totally up and running yet. The new brewery, when I walked through on the Friday before they opened on the following Wednesday, the brew house had not been brewed in yet at all. All the tanks were empty. Some of the glycol wasn't hooked up. Some of the hard piping that they have going from the hot room to the cold room wasn't fully completed. So there were still some little kinks brewery side that needed to be worked out still in order to actually make beer there. So I had heard from a couple of their employees that they were still brewing at the old facility and then just bringing the beer over to the new facility. So they may be on a crunch because I know the last couple of weeks at their old facility, it was going gangbusters. People were drinking their stuff like crazy. So it's not like they could actually like stockpile like a new brewery would be able to do when they're not open. They weren't able to do that at all. So I think that's why they're running into a little bit of a crunch with what beers are available.
Yeah. And when one kind of has to, you know, wonder, you know, what suffers as a result of that? Are they, you know, do you pull back on what you're distributing temporarily so that you can meet the demands in the new tap room? I mean, I feel like they've got an established enough customer base here that people would understand if they're like, yeah, sorry, we're a little low on beer. We've got some guest taps on. They're not going to lose. They don't run that risk of losing customers, making a bad first impression like a new brewery might if they start running out of beer.
Yeah. So I think what based on what Todd was talking to everybody at the media invite night, he basically said they're not going to be expanding their distribution right off the bat. And that sort of was my sort of like, yeah, I sort of took it as a hint that they are running a little low on beer. So essentially it sounds like they're, even though they have this big, awesome facility, they're going to keep their footprint about where it is right now so that they can sort of hold on for dear life. And then once they get the new spot up and running, they can then focus on, you know, expanding those and getting things out further. going forward. So,
yeah, it makes sense.
It does. It sort of stinks. You know, it seems like I was talking to some other brewery industry people, and the one thing it seemed like they were opening almost too soon. Like they almost like were running low on funds. I know this building cost them almost like $10 million to build, and to open and not have the brewery running when you open really sort of tells me that they need to open to get money in the door versus being ready to open with the brewery running at full tilt.
Or maybe they had some sort of limitation on the other end where, you know, their lease had to be up and out by a certain point on the previous building. I mean, that the whole garrison that they've got there, for those of you who aren't aware, they're calling the attached, you know, shops and things that are going to be part of that facility, the garrison. You know, I don't think any of those are even occupied at this point.
They don't even have at the point of opening, they didn't even have doors or windows cut into them. So they're not ready or operational. They each are like physically cemented into place. So they're not like food trucks. They can't move. They can't leave. So they all have water, sewer, gas attached. So
they're going for like the Kawadi type thing where it's, you know, attached, yeah. Kind of like that.
Yeah, it's all under their umbrella, pretty much, I believe. But the hard thing is that those weren't, I don't think they were even put, they weren't even passed through regional building yet. Like they were still working with the architects on the interior build and layout of those, because each of the different entities that's going to fill one of those Connex containers has a different need and a different setup that they're going to want to have. From like the bike shop was not going to need fryers or like refrigeration. And then the burger place is going to need different things than the cookie shop. So it's going to take a little bit of time. I know they said September for those things to open. Hopefully the city and the county will work with them to help sort of speed that process along, because, you know, building inspectors are notoriously hard to work with.
Yeah. They tend to be the biggest delays that people run up against when they're trying to get anything open, you know, which is why I always have a little bit of a chuckle at the optimism of new breweries that are like, we'll be open this fall. Like, this fall?
Well, in one, you know, upcoming brewery, everyone always asks us, what do you know about Weldworks? And for us, it's almost always, we don't have any new news. You know, I can email Jake or Kristen or anybody over at Weldworks, and they're not going to be able to give me too much information, you know, more than what you can see driving by their spot.
Yeah. I'm sure they're in the same, you know, boat as a lot of places, you know, right now building and, you know, building materials are, you know, exponentially more than they were a couple of years ago. And, you know, last I heard, as far as that facility went, they were down to basically the electrical connection into the building and the wall that it was attached to, and everything else was raised. So they were, you know, proceeding from a, you know, almost near complete rebuild. And that was the last I heard. And it's an awful time to be going, you know, down to the concrete and trying to work your way up when, you know, 2x4s are $5 a throw.
Yeah. That's the hard thing is that, you know, the average consumer will drive by, see piles of dirt and not much happening and not realize all of the different things that have to happen behind the scenes. So
yeah, I'm sure they're procuring materials and all that.
Yep. And fingers crossed that they'll get things figured out here soon, because it would be nice to have them as part of our community. But yeah, for Red Leg, jumping back to them, I feel like that facility is missing something. And that's my personal thing. It's this huge brewing facility, 14,000 square feet, including the tap room. But the tap room inside in the dead of winter can only hold 125 people, which seems like an oversight. Especially in Colorado, where you never know what the weather's going to be like. It could be warm all winter, or it could be massive snowstorms all the time.
Yeah. And it's still far more than their current facility, though.
It definitely is. But they've expanded that interior area like over and over to give it more space. And this spot seems capped, where they can't expand the interior space a whole lot.
So well, that's maybe they'll figure out something with, you know, maybe if there's a vacancy in one of the adjacent places in the garrison, they can set up something in there with heaters and have additional seating. I mean, I would hope that those places aren't vacant, obviously.
Oh yeah.
But you know, maybe they'll have some capability, you know, or once the money starts rolling in, then they can look at, you know, some additional, you know, outdoor heaters or some way to make a patio work, kind of like places did through COVID.
Right. And that's the nice thing is they do have that rooftop patio that hopefully if they put some patio heaters up there, it'll be, you know, manageable during the wintertime. And maybe they can offer like a discount for anyone that sits up there outside and gets, you know, served outside. But the other, my other little piece of criticism for it is that all of the like marketing images show this big, huge windows, all these big windows. And those just go into this small, like, 15 foot wide or 15 feet deep coal or hot side brew house. And the actual spot where people and the community gathers inside is like a, feels like a low ceilinged, not that creative of a spot. And we kept seeing all these images from the build out with these, those big, huge cathedral, you know, super tall windows on the side of that sort of hangar style thing. And to have only the brewery there and not have people be able to sit, you know, either inside of these big windows taking in the sunshine or something like that, just seems, in my opinion, like an oversight. And there may have been a total, you know, the reasoning for having the tall, tall ceilings there allows them to have, you know, as big of the tanks as they want to have pretty much. But it just seems like the consumer side, it feels almost like just tacked on and not as thoughtfully created.
Do they, so like I said, I haven't been there, so I'm just going to ask these questions.
Yeah.
For people who are sitting there, I mean, can they see like the brew house and the big glass? I mean, it kind of, you know, and I'm just picturing this based off your description. It kind of seems a little bit like Bristol's setup down at Ivy Wild, where their tap room is kind of, you know, in the school proper, but the brew house has got kind of the big set of windows, you know, off to the side there. It kind of strikes me as similar to that based on your description.
It is similar to that, but the issue is that because they went for a separation between fermentation and hot side, there's a full length wall, floor to ceiling that seals off the fermentation room with all of your vessels, mm-hmm. and where the four vessel brew house is. So from the tasting room, all you can see are fermentation tanks. You can't see out those big windows. So those big windows are just letting light into this brew house area, not anywhere else. Hmm. Which is, you know, it just seems weird.
It's always interesting. I'm trying to remember. I think it was like a Firmly talk that I went to, where they talked about this brewery that was having problems with their beer, and they finally traced it back to a sight glass on the brew house that was positioned near a window and was just taking sunlight as it was coming out of the tank, you know, in transfer. And they were just, you know, skunking the whole thing as it ate up sunshine going past.
Hopefully that's not something they'll run into.
No, I mean, that's the first thing that came to mind. I'm like, man, I hope they accounted for that.
It's just, I think for me, the really sort of wow windows that they've shown in the pictures they've shared of the place, looking through those windows, you have to sort of go like through a little like runoff detention pond area and around the side to even just look in those. It's not like there's a patio out in front of there that shows you like that you could look in and watch the brewers working. It's completely cordoned off from where people would gather, which to me seems sort of opposite of what every other brewery does.
Yeah, I was going to say, having been to like Surly's brewery, they've got in Minnesota, they've got a, if you walk into the tap room, they've got their little merch store and then their big, you know, common room seating area where they'll serve you and get you food. But then off to your immediate right as you walk in is this big glass wall, and behind that is their brew house and their brewing operations and a bunch of fermenters. And the only thing I can think of is maybe, you know, because of, you know, the hot side being, you know, where things are boiling, maybe for safety reasons, you know, Minnesota being different than Colorado, maybe for some of this stuff, you know, maybe regional building wouldn't let them have just a sheet of glass between their main tap room and the place where the magic happens. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure, but like right now it just feels it's a really cool space, and I don't want to have this come off as overly critical. It's a very cool space. It definitely has tons of space for people to enjoy themselves, but literally the windows in the brewery or in the tap room that you can see into the brewery area literally just look at their little 7-barrel tank system. And it's only like a 20-foot wide section of windows. So it sort of separates the magic from the consumer. And well, yeah,
I guess not to belabor the point, we highly recommend everyone go check out Red Leg's new facility because it's huge and amazing. And, you know, let us know what you think of their window situation. You know, tell us we're wrong. Tell us we're right.
Yeah, do you want to see the brewery through the glasses or the glass, or you know, are you okay just sort of hanging out in a big square room that really has no character to it? That's my overly harsh critique, is that it just feels tacked on. So
maybe they got more coming. You know, like you said, the stuff out in the rest of it for the Garrison isn't quite built out. Maybe there's more trimmings coming, so to speak.
Oh, and the outdoor area is beautiful. They've got a great big grass area. No dogs in the grass, by the way. But there's some other wood chippy areas where you can let your dog pee or do their business.
Is it grass or turf grass?
I think it's grass.
Oh, okay.
At least I thought it was. If it was turf grass, then it was a really good it fooled me. But yeah, it looked like grass. So hopefully it stays looking good. But yeah, go check them out. Tell us we're wrong, because I'd rather someone tell me I'm wrong than just accept my opinion as theirs. So let's move on to the next topic, which is a beer festival, which we haven't had in a while.
Yeah, this is half the reason we're out there. And you know, circling back,
I would say like three quarters.
Circling back for only half a second, Weldworks will be pouring at said beer festival.
Oh, nice. Which is happening in a week from Saturday, August 14th, at Church of Our Savior Episcopal Church over by the Broadmoor. Yeah. It's going to be, if you don't know it already, Feast of St. Arnold.
Yeah, one of our favorite local beer fests, as we like to say. And per usual, we will be helping out with some of the judging. And, you know, family friendly. This is one you can bring the kids to. Tickets are on sale now. They're still doing that Pilgrimage of Pints thing, where if you go to the participating breweries and complete the pilgrimage to X number, you get a discount off your tickets. The more you go to, the better your discount, yada, yada, yada. It's a lot of fun for those who want to put in the effort and go try out the beers. I personally don't do it because I don't want to know what they're serving, and I don't want to have favorites for what I'm judging. So I tend to kind of stay away from it because I like to go in blind for the judging aspect, but I usually hang around for the festival and try a few things afterwards.
A couple of things you might be able to answer that I asked Bob and didn't get an answer back on.
Okay.
Kids are free, right?
I believe so.
I assume so. I don't see any tickets. It just says general admission on their site. So I'm not seeing any of that.
I've never seen any ticket for child charge there. They do have a play area for kids and stuff. So, you know, it's intentful that you can bring children to it. But yeah, I don't believe there's a cost to bring them in. You know, there's water available around the place for the kids. And then, of course, there's food trucks. I think they usually get the snow cone, Kona Ice, I think they call it, food truck there for the kiddos too. So there's options, and it's definitely kid friendly. But no, I do not believe that there is a charge for kids.
Yeah, and I my other question to, I think it was to Brian a while back, was if they had DD tickets available, but perhaps those are you know, free entry as well. So not totally sure about it, but we'll try to get some more information on that and put that in at least in some sort of info with this podcast.
Yeah, it'll be on our Facebook or something leading up to the event, or Instagram, or any other place you can follow folks on the beer.
Yeah, so essentially I think there's some good spots that'll be there this year. The brewery list looks pretty fun.
Yep, no. And I've got the list of participating breweries here as far as, there it is. So the ones that are signed up to compete this year are Battle Mountain, Brass, Colorado Mountain Brewery, Deuces Wild, Local Relic, Mash Mechanics, Nano 108, Red Swing, Storybook, Jack's, Trinity, Goat Patch, and Peaks and Pines. So that may not be an exhaustive list. I know that there may still be a couple breweries that might pop in to compete as well. But yeah, we'll be giving all those beers a sample that Saturday morning. And the winners will be announced during the band intermission mid-afternoon.
That'll be nice. I enjoyed being a guest judge last year. I will miss it this year. I'll just be there taking pictures and drinking the waters.
We expanded the judging pool too. We've added a couple of additional BJCP judges. I recruited a couple of our national rank judges. So judges who are better than me. To do this along with us. And I think we'll still have a couple of celebrity judges that Bob was wrangling up as well. So I have a few more judges that results in a bit more feedback and a bit more diversity of opinion. So that's always good.
One of the pieces that they always have at the feast, which I think is interesting, which will really sort of be expanded this year, is the local places that are not breweries. So they've always had people like 291 Whiskey and 300 Days of Shine. Breckenridge Distillery's been there in the past. I think they're going to be there this year as well. But both of our new meaderies in town, Drekar and Antelope Ridge, will both be there, which will be really interesting, because I know that Annapurna Mead has been there in the past as well, and they were super popular because their stuff is more like a light cidery type mead. But Drekar and Antelope Ridge are on the completely opposite spectrum from what Annapurna is doing, which is going to be really interesting to have all those different options to sort of try different meads to see if it's something that you like or don't like.
Yeah, I kind of hope they can find a way to kind of stick them all together, you know, so that you can have like this little mead corner and go and kind of try them all side by side by side in a way. I'm guessing they'll probably spread them out, but it would be kind of neat to be able to do that.
They had done that a couple years ago. I feel like they put all of the hard alcohol in one spot and the non-brewery stuff. And I think
that's true.
I think they got like sort of negative feedback because people didn't go over into that section. So I know that the last time it ran, not last year, but 2 years ago, they had them all sort of intermingled. And I liked that better because it seemed like it didn't put emphasis on them over the breweries or the breweries over them. So it just allowed it to be an all encompassing festival. So,
yeah. And hopefully it won't be, you know, 90 some odd degrees. I think 2 years ago when we went, I darn near got heat stroke.
it will probably be hot or it will be raining. You never know what's going to happen these days. The other one that I wanted to point out, the Ohana Kava Bar is going to be there. So if you are doing non-alcoholic stuff like I am at this point, that's going to be a non-alcoholic option to get some kava, drink instead of kava tea. I think it's tea, instead of a beer or a wine or a seltzer or cider. So, they always have a wide range of interesting things that you can get there. So it's always one of our favorite ones. It's probably the premier Colorado Springs Festival that's happening these days, with All Colorado not happening anymore and Springs Beer Fest really sort of not being anything at all. So definitely get your tickets. I'm expecting them to sell out here in the next week and a half. So.
Yeah.
If you haven't gotten a ticket, hop on it. It's outside, so I'm going to guess they're going to, you know, if you feel like you need a mask, you can wear a mask, but it's also, you can social distance pretty easily because it is outside.
Yeah. And speaking of sold out upcoming beer festivals, there is the Black Forest Beer Garden fundraiser that's actually happening this Saturday, August 7th. However, it is sold out. We were going to plug them if we could have got this out about a week earlier. But at that point, I think they said they had 100 tickets remaining to sell, and they sold them all out in the week hence. So kudos to them for getting that festival sold out. It's definitely a cool little community fundraiser that they do up there in the Black Forest area.
Yeah. It's too bad they are sold out, because that would be a great thing to go to. But yeah, you're right. It goes to a good cause, and hopefully next year they'll do it again and they can expand it. I know they kept the numbers low this year. They were only allowing about 270, 280 people total, just so that they didn't have to worry about, you know, people being too close together and having to do masks in a small area or anything like that. So they kept the numbers low this year. Hopefully next year they can expand it and allow more people to join in.
Yeah. Keep creeping back towards normal as best we can.
Yep. We'll see. This Delta variant is looking scary. So fingers crossed, we can keep working and not have it affect us too badly.
Yeah.
So on the sort of bad news, coronavirus wise, Pints and Prostates was going to be that sort of de facto GABF replacement this year. And they just released a little thing about, I think, yesterday or the day before, saying that they have decided to cancel the Denver Rare Beer Tasting. It was gonna happen September 9th, and they decided it just wasn't worth trying to still put it on with all the increased concerns with COVID-19 in play.
They were going to have it coincide with the Craft Brewers Conference, which is that weekend of September 9th as well, which would make sense. There stands to be a fair amount of people in town for that. But I'm curious to see how that's going to go. I know when we signed up for it a couple months ago, they were saying that they were going to have masks enforced there at the conference. And I would guess they're definitely going to stick to their guns, like you mentioned, with the Delta going like it is. So be interesting to see how that shakes out. I'm definitely curious to go up there and check it out.
Yeah. You know, Craft Brewers Conference is still on. They have not made any announcement that is canceled at this point. They're still doing that, but they are definitely, we were talking before the show, they're probably going to have some sort of increased precautions, which is going to be, maybe everyone has to wear masks inside, which will stink, but you know, it's one of those things that is a necessary evil to try to, not evil, necessary thing you have to go through to be able to celebrate this year.
Yeah. Well, and I know they had planned, at least for some of the conference and keynotes, that the main hall where they were doing them was going to be at limited capacity with some distance seating. And then there was going to be overflow areas where they were going to pipe that broadcast out. So I think they planned as best they could for whatever came along, and I guess we'll just see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, so they actually updated all of their health and safety information and their requirements on July 29th. So this is about a week old-ish, but basically masks are recommended and encouraged. But if you're not vaccinated, they are requiring masks. They will have masks available. Looks like they just have surgical ones available. At this point, they're allowing 100% capacity in all the sections. Who knows if Polis and the state will reduce those numbers as we get closer to this. Mm-hmm. But they are doing, like you said, advanced sign up for seminars. And they'll have some overflow rooms with, I think, a streamed video of what's happening to sort of help sort of separate people.
I had not checked out the updated health and safety stuff. So.
Well, and one of the big things that they did is that the Colorado Convention Center actually updated all of their HVAC systems to put in some really heavy duty air filters and things that basically recycle the air as quickly as possible so that there's less of a chance of that sort of infection through the air, which
sucking the Rona right out.
Yep, exactly. So they've worked on that. If you go to the Craft Brewers Conference website, if you are going to the Craft Brewers Conference, if you're a brewer and you're listening to this, They have a list of everything of what to expect and their sort of regulations for the event. And those will be continually updated as things change or progress leading up to the event. So One other event that's happening sooner than all these other ones that we are finally are finishing our sort of news rundown with is a fun event that's going to be happening up in Loveland on Saturday. And yeah. I think Josh and I will both be there. I'm going to bring a drone out, a bunch of cameras. We're going to take some bunch of pictures, talk to a bunch of brewers. But the big thing is it's not a brew fest of any sort. It's a harvest field day for root shoot malting.
Yeah, it's an industry thing where they bring out, you know, brewers, partners, people that they have worked with, their friends and family. And we're fortunate to be included among that group to go and check this out. It's literally held out in a field in a bunch of tents. They bring brewers in, they're pouring beer, having appetizers. They got some bands. They're doing an antique thresher demonstration, which is always cool. I've seen a few of those. You know, being a farm kid from Minnesota, I'm familiar with that. Not personally. I mean, I've seen the machines, the inoperative ones. I'm fairly certain we have a couple in the back of our old farmstead that are, you know, rusting away. But it's cool to see them in action and the way that they, you know, used to do so much of this by hand, throwing the barley into the threshing machine by hand. They didn't have the big headers that they've got now that draw all of it in and send it to the processor. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. And so this event actually serves as Root Shoot's anniversary party. This will be their fifth anniversary. So it's going to be a fun time. It is private. It's not a public event. So sorry, you won't be able to go, but we will share some of our experiences from there on the blog and probably on Facebook as well. But yeah, it's you know, it's going to be great. They've got a bunch of different breweries that are bringing fun beers that are all made with root shoot malting and malt. So it's all stuff grown on their 112 acres out there. So look for that. We will have more coverage to come on that. So I guess we should probably talk about some new breweries because there's a bunch coming since we've last had a podcast.
Yeah, and we've already mentioned a couple. Yeah, at least the Antelope Ridge Meadery, they'll be pouring at the Feast of St. Arnold, like we said, and they opened up about a month and a half ago, I want to say it was. And
end of July, I believe. End of June.
I feel like it's been about a month. Yeah, they're doing, it's interesting as we get these different meaderies in town that some of them have, there's different concepts of what their meat is like. Some people are doing, you know, the very traditional, you know, high gravity, you know, fruit backed type of meads, which I think is kind of Drakkar's thing. And certainly Antelope Ridge does some of those. But then they're also doing some of the more sessionable, you know, 5-6% type of things that are easy drinkers. And so they've got different flights of those. And they obviously serve them, you know, in different quantities as a result, because you're not going to have a full 10-ounce pour of a 15% mead and you'll be stumbling out of there. But it's neat that their philosophy, I guess, covers both of those. But he's also very heavily influenced by the Greeley breweries like Wiley and Weldworks. I know Dan, the owner, is a big Weldworks fan and cites them as a influence for him in how he does, you know, his creative process with some of his meads.
Yeah. We have the awesome opportunity to have Dan over for a little mead share back in June before they opened. And he had brought a bunch of sort of samples that he had made over the past year that weren't 100% what was going to be served at the meadery, but a lot, sort of a good smorgasbord of different concepts that he was working through and trying. And it was incredible tasting the difference between, you know, a sort of a 5% vanilla raspberry mead and like a 18% still table mead that was just hearty and really, really good. But it was just really interesting seeing those different styles, but from the same producer.
Yeah. And it's everything I've had from there has been, really high quality. The difference of flavors, I mean, no two of them are alike, which is really cool. You know, some places can kind of get into that, you know, it's the same base mead, but we added fruit or we added hops, you know, and they all kind of have this singular sort of style in the background, but they're just, you know, presented differently. And I don't think there's anyone in town that's doing that, but I have definitely run across that in some other places. And like I said, at Antelope Ridge, it's just no two are alike. One of their most recent releases that I got a chance to try when I was in there recently, last weekend, in fact, was this cherry limeade mead. And if you hadn't told me that it was a mead and that there was 5% alcohol in it, I would have assumed you just ran down to Sonic and dumped a cherry limeade into my glass. And that's what it was. So it was pretty neat, you know, to have that be so, you know, on point and to the point where you didn't notice that it was an alcoholic beverage.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was one of the things that I noticed when we tasted them. And I still haven't had a chance to get out to the meadery to check it out. You know, I'm not imbibing an alcohol at this moment, so it's sort of hard to taste mead and that thing. But it definitely, it is that Wylie Weldworks style mead, which is really, I think they fit into a spot in Colorado Springs that we don't have yet. Like we were talking about earlier, Annapurna makes these sort of crisp wine inspired, really dry meads. And Dracar is more like the still,
traditional table, sort of meads.
Yeah. Traditional table meads. And Dan has really taken this approach of these cool, almost, yeah, like craft beer inspired flavors, which is, it's super fun. And I think they're going to go gangbusters once people actually realize, you know, where they're at and who they are.
Yeah, I think they're definitely worth a try. And, you know, the nice thing is they're literally just right around the corner of the shopping center, more or less from Cogstone.
Yeah.
So you can kind of make a little, you know, miniature crawl out of it, hit up Cogstone and hit them up right around the corner. So it's they're easy walking distance between the two.
Yeah, that's a good point, because they are right there, literally a stone's throw north of Cogstone, same side of the street. Yep. So pretty darn easy to get to them. Definitely check them out. They're going to be open. They're open right now. So I know you were in there with Airmen the other day, right?
Yeah. Like I said, that was last weekend when we were in there, and that's when they had released that cherry limeade. And you know, even Airmen said that, you know, he was real impressed with everything there. He liked what they were doing. So that's one of the only breweries on the new brewery list that we're going to talk about that's actually open at the moment. Most of the rest of them on our list here are hoping to get there before the year is out, maybe.
We'll see. Next on the list is OCC.
Yeah, and that stands for Old Colorado City Brewing. And this is owners Dan and Claire Ramos. Dan works for, I just blanked on the name of the yeast company.
Isn't it BSI? Out of Woodland
Park. BSI, thank you.
There you go.
So he's a yeast wrangler up there at BSI. He's a big, you know, Belgian beer kind of guy. I've known him and his wife quite a bit through the Brew Brothers of Pikes Peak Homebrew Club. And they're really going in on this, and they've snagged a brewer that really fits in with that mindset in Taylor Donner.
Yeah, I'm glad that Taylor hooked up with them, because Taylor was looking at trying to open a brewery on his own this past year or so, and had some prospects sort of fall through. So it's really nice to see that he has hooked up with Dan and Claire to help sort of elevate what OCC was doing.
Yeah. And like I said, it's that similar mindset, you know, wanting to do the Belgian and farmhouse style ales, which I know Taylor has a passion for, and Dan, you know, that's kind of his wheelhouse too. So it was a really good marriage from a business perspective for those two to get together on a brewery.
Yeah, now we'll just have to see how it all pans out. I know they are right now working on getting their self opened. They're going through the hell of regional building. So yeah, Fingers crossed they can open. I know they're saying fall 2021. So this fall, hopefully we'll have an update here in a couple months. And
maybe, I think it's doable. It sounded like they were just trying to get some plumbing stuff finished up and then put the brew system through its paces here probably before this month is out. So I would say, you know, this fall, you know, late September, early October is doable. But again, it all comes down to regional building.
Yep, exactly. Hopefully we'll try to get Dan and or Taylor on the show, and Claire maybe if she wants to join as well, to talk about their plans for the future as we, you know, as we get closer to their opening. But next up on our list is Downtown's newest brewery.
Yeah, this is, I was surprised at this because, again, having talked to the Bell brothers, Cody and Curtis, they have wanted to open a brewery for a while, and they had been targeting Fountain as their location where they wanted to open up, because at the time it was an underserved area. Now, at that point, Peaks and Pines has moved in there, and they're doing a pretty slick bit of business out there. So the Bell brothers signing a lease on a place downtown, kind of very near to Oscar Blues, was surprising, but I'm glad to see them kind of living out their dream. They just closed out on a Kickstarter today or yesterday. I think it was this morning, Wednesday, August 4th, that it wrapped up. And what was the final total on that, Ryan?
I believe it was $13,347. I actually have it up here. So
yeah, so yeah, they hit their stretch goals, which I know they're the last one they were shooting for, based on one of the last updates I saw from them, was they wanted to clear that 12,000 mark. And looks like they blew past that. So good for them.
Yeah, they'll be at 114 North Tejon Street. So it's essentially the newly renovated spot that Zizo's used to be in. That white building, they took the front facade off, put some windows in it, and they split it into two units. So there's 112 and there's 114 in that same spot. So as 114, they're pretty much directly next door to Oscar Blues. Mm-hmm. So whether that's a, you know, good or bad thing, I know we've seen with other breweries opening up in the same areas as, you know, pre-existing breweries or tap rooms, you get sort of overflow from either way, you know, going either direction. So it could be a boon for both Oscar Blues and for Bell Brothers. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. I know they got like a three barrel system, so hopefully they can keep up. That's a sort of a small system for a brewery, especially in downtown.
Yeah. That's always one of the more interesting things. I think when places open up, they, you know, want to take less risk in their investment in the initial system. And so they go with a smaller, you know, three barrel sort of thing. And then, you know, if they get real popular, then they're constantly in ketchup mode, constantly brewing. And, you know, at what point, you know, do you decide to make that leap to the larger system? And, you know, how do you fit that in? Do you go big with that initial push and get a good size system, or do you, you know, wait a couple years and make sure that your product's good before you do it? I don't know the answer, and everyone has to come to that conclusion for themselves, I think, when they open a brewery.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it comes down to how much you want to work in your new brewery. I know that for a brewery like Cogstone, where their team is in there brewing all the time because they have a small system, but mm-hmm. they're okay with that. And, you know, there's that option, and then there's other, you know, breweries that have a 30 barrel system where they don't have to brew as often for, you know, for a smaller clientele. So there's two sides to the coin. It just all depends on what you have set up and what you're doing. So,
yeah, I guess the other advantage to having the larger system is then when you aren't using it, then you can contract brew out to other places and still keep the system, you know, up and running and have income from its use. So that is certainly something to consider.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see if they can keep up down there, because, you know, who knows how many people are going to be wanting drinking beer downtown. So
yeah, well, we wish them all the best. And then the bottom of our new brewery list here, we've got the no news is, well, good news, bad news, still news, no news anyway, about Batch Slapped.
Yeah, they're claiming to be the first the brewery and cidery in Colorado, which
I don't know how you do that without two licenses, but maybe that's what they're going for. We have nothing about them. No news, you know.
Right, I think either no news is good news or no news is news. Yeah. So who knows what's going to happen there? We will keep you updated if anything does happen. But yeah,
That's yeah, Batchlapped. If you're listening, reach out. You know, let us know that you're not vaporware.
Exactly. In software terms.
Yes.
On to the next segment of this show. We're going to talk about a book, which I just finished reading and Josh has just started. The Brewers Association just put out, thanks to Dr. Keith Villa, who you may know from Blue Moon fame. He created and founded Blue Moon Brewing way back in the day and then sold that to Coors and, you know, went on board with Coors for a while, I believe. But he has now switched over to brewing THC and CBD type beers at Saria Brewing up in Denver. And
those are non-alcoholic, I believe, correct? That's
one of the
very
main,
low alcohol.
Yeah, that's one of the key points that he makes in this book, is that because of the chemical and physiological properties of THC, adding that to an alcoholic product is not safe and ill-advised. He in the book, he likens it to when they put caffeine and guarana into Four Loko back in the day, and kids were drinking way too much. Their heart rate was going skyrocketing, and it was this weird uppers and downers type thing with this super heavy caffeinated alcoholic beverage. With THC and alcohol, the thing about THC is usually prescribed to cancer patients as an anti-nausea type medication. Mm-hmm. The problem is that when you drink too much alcohol, the alcohol in your stomach will tell your body, oh, hey, there's this poisonous chemical in me. We need to throw up. If you over-imbibe an alcoholic beverage that has THC in it, you may have some of those anti-nausea reactions to the THC.
Thus increasing your risk of alcohol poisoning because your body won't purge it.
Exactly. There are those worries, and just so that's just easy to just not worry about it, they de-alcoholize their beers before they put THC in it.
I always kind of figured that the barrier to entry, you know, and of course this came up in Colorado because we were, you know, really one of the first to field in legalizing, you know, marijuana for recreational use, was, you know, why couldn't you put it in a beer? Well, I mean, you could, but the big thing is it would be cost prohibitive. The amount that you would need to put in a beer for it to be viable would be really expensive based on what they charge per ounce for that stuff out here. So yeah, it seems like, you know, and this, the book and what you're saying seems to back it up, is that, you know, don't put it in a beer, put it in this non-alcoholic product where the point is the THC and the CBD.
Right. And so they brew both non-alcoholic beverages that you can buy just a non-alcoholic beer from them. They have both a white ale, Blue Moon style, and an IPA. And then they also have THC versions of those. So I think I'm going to try to work with their team, and they're going to send me some of the non-alcoholic ones without the THC. But then Emerald Fields and Maggie's Farm here in Colorado Springs carries the THC versions periodically. They just recommended to call ahead and make sure that they had the ones that I was looking for in stock. So
sure,
there's going to be I'm going to put a whole little review about the book and of the beverages themselves here up in the next week and a half or 2 weeks once I can acquire everything. But it's a really interesting book. If you get a chance, if you're into just learning about new styles of brewing, 2/3 of this book talks about growing, harvesting, and processing marijuana for use in beer. But also, it also goes into the history behind the legalization issues that have plagued marijuana and cannabis, and pretty much where a lot of the negative connotation has actually come from. It's a really interesting book. I'm not going to go totally into it right now. That's for a later time. We may try to get Dr. Villa on the show some point down the future once Josh and I have both read the book, just to talk about it, because it's super fascinating, because it's a different style of beer, essentially.
Yeah, and it's what I like is that they've also provided some recipes in here for these non-alcoholic beer bases. They've got a chocolate coconut cream stout recipe, a peanut butter porter. I mean, some styles that people are familiar with. A couple of good lager recipes in here.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I was curious is, you know, even if I'm not interested personally in using THC and CBD in a beer, having knowledge of non-alcoholic recipe bases is always valuable. So right. It's an interesting educational treatise, I guess, on those products, but also having, you know, that homebrewer's mindset where it's like, well, what can you tell me about brewing a non-alcoholic beer? Well, that's in here too. So it's got kind of a two-pronged attack there.
Yeah, and they talk about all the different ways of taking the alcohol out of your beer. Mm. And ways to make sure that you keep as much of the flavor in, because some of the ways of removing alcohol can damage those flavor compounds, especially if you're making an IPA.
Oh, for sure.
And the other
hops
thing
are
that
sensitive.
Right. And the other thing that this book goes into is a lot of things about sort of like compliance and regulatory things. So it talks about the differences between different states and labeling and what's required and not required. One of the things that I remember just off the top of my head is the difference between California and Colorado. Both states where recreational and medical are both legal, but in California, you can't put anything on these THC beers that relates to actual beer. So you can't say THC infused stout. You have to say something like grain in THC infused beverage, and then just allude to it being a stout in the description without using any like specific beer style terms. So one of the ones when they were talking about an IPA, they talked about how, you know, it's a, you know, cannabis infused beverage with citrusy aromas that come from Cascade, Amarillo, and some other hops, which they can talk about hops because that's just another, you know, botanical type thing, but they can't say this tastes just like an IPA or this is an IPA that we took the alcohol out of. They can't do that for California. For Colorado, they could. So they could say it's a THC-infused IPA for Colorado. So depending on what part of the country that you're in, if you're looking at maybe having your brewery create these, definitely make sure that you are sticking to what the regulatory rules are.
Yeah. And, you know, at about 150 pages, it's a pretty quick read. I'm about a third of the way in, and I obviously had flipped through it because I was looking for specifically, you know, is there recipes in here too? So yeah, it's worth checking out if you even have a passing interest in it, even from an academic standpoint. Highly recommend that book from the
Yeah, Brewers I really liked it. I liked that it was short because I've had some of the other ones like these yeast and these hops and the water books, and they're great books, but because the subject matter sometimes can get really technical in a lot of these, even in the cannabis and beer one, the shortness of the book itself allowed it to not feel like I was, you know, drudging through page after page of, you know, a chemistry textbook.
Yeah. So, I was about to say, it doesn't feel textbooky when it's a bit shorter.
Yeah. And it's also the writing style. Keith has made it really approachable, even when he gets into some of those nitty gritty details. So
there you go. Brewing with Cannabis Using THC and CBD in Beer by Keith Villa, PhD. Worth checking out.
We will have more from that and on that in the near future once Josh finishes it. So
I'm working on it.
I know you'll get it figured out. We'll hopefully have Dr. Villa on the show or somebody from the Saria Brewing Company or Saria. I hope that they'll help me say that correctly. Lastly, you know, I think we probably should have done this first, but a little segment of what we're drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I've been doing just, you know, I'll get my stuff out of the way because it's a little shorter and sweeter. No pun intended, because I'm not doing alcohol right now. But thanks to a neighbor of mine, Matt Schnipper from, he's one of the editors or food writers over at the Colorado Springs Indie. He turned me on to hop teas, which are made in Boulder, and they're super good. And it's just carbonated water teas. Tea, like black tea and hops. So the one I had tonight was their really hoppy one, which it actually tastes better than all the non-alcoholic IPAs that I've had. And it's one of these things that has like zero calories, zero nothing. It's just tea with hops and carbonation. So that's what I'm drinking. They make a lot of fun stuff. If you are you know, someone who's pregnant maybe and looking for something to sort of scratch that beer itch, go to their website. I believe it is hoptea.com, and they do a subscription. They put out special batches of special hop ones, special botanical ones. I had a Thai basil one and Calypso hops a couple weeks ago. Just really interesting things. And it's sort of like craft carbonated tea industry that's totally new. So
scratches the itch. That's the important thing.
It does.
Well, I personally am drinking something from a Thin Man Brewery of Buffalo, New York. And the way I obtained this is from a Halftime Beverage, which is a they kind of run a neat little service where they have these gift and variety boxes that they'll ship out. And that's what they sent me. They were kind enough to provide me with. I just said, you know, much like you say to a sushi chef, you know, I'm in your hands. Send me whatever you like. And they sent me a mixed four pack of some Crispy Boys and IPAs. And this one in particular is the Phantasma Oat Cream India Pale Ale. It does contain some lactose, so it's not a pure oat milk type of IPA. I'm sorry, my vegan friends. But yeah, this Halftime Beverage sent me a sampler of beers to try, and they can send you a sampler of beers as well. Anything you want as far as, you know, a mixed box, you know, their choice, but they have some themed boxes. Like you just want IPAs or lagers, they've got the Crispy Boy box for you. So they got a bunch of options out there. Shipping runs a little expensive, but that's the risk you run when you get a bunch of beer sent to you in the mail. They're definitely worthwhile checking out. Their website is halftimebeverage.com, and we encourage you to give them a look and order yourself some fun beers that you may not be able to get your hands on out here.
Well, the nice thing about their shipping, it is expensive, but it's flat rate. So yeah, you can get up to 24 bottles or cans for $24. So if you're buying two cases of beer or a case, 24 ounce, I guess a case is 24 beers. If you're buying a whole case of beers,
it's still $24.
It's still $24. But if you're only buying two or three, it's still $24. So definitely make your purchase worth it with their flat rate shipping. But yeah, they've got some great stuff. And Thin Man, I want to shout out to them because they make some really good stuff. I had a raspberry sour from them the other day called Minky Boodle. And they make really, really good stuff. They're a good brewery. So
yeah, this Phantasma is really good. There's some little ghosts on the label. It's definitely a small batch beer for them. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's a nice, easy drinking IPA. It doesn't have that big lactose hit to it, but it still has that creamy kind of mouthfeel. So it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, thanks for listening to our latest podcast. We'll try to do that, what we're drinking at the beginning next time, so that we can maybe.
And we won't leave you in suspense all the time.
Yeah, keep touching on what we're drinking throughout the episode, because I went really sort of boring because I had my hop tea, but I also had a watermelon LaCroix. So life gets a little different when you're not drinking beer. So
yeah, well, it's you know, I'm sure we'll be updating you again soon. We've got the Weldworks Invitational coming up end of October. You know, beer events are finally getting back in the swing of things. We'll be attending those that we can and providing coverage of that. You can expect some stuff out of us soon from the Feast of St. Arnold and the Field Day up at Rootshoot. So we'll try to be a bit more regular with our podcasts and whatnot for our dedicated listeners who are sticking with us.
Yeah, we'll definitely try. We just gotta sort of just schedule these things better. So anyways, thanks for listening. Josh, thanks for joining me and getting on me to actually record this, because we've been needing to do it for a while.
Well, like I said, it's summer. It's easy to get lost in our post-pandemic freedom. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. Thanks for listening.